Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Starting Small Music Podcast. I'm your host, Justin McCormick, and today we have a very special guest joining the show. We have producer and songwriter, Evan Klein. You're going to hear Evan's story of coming to the United States from Romania as a child and what first got him into music. You'll also hear the story behind his decision to make the move to Nashville, working with artists such as Shay Lynn and Will Cullen, and the story behind writing Tennessee Love Song with Anella Harem. I had a great time talking to Evan. I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and we'll see you at the end.
Just keep a smile on your face and it'll be okay. Try not to be bitter, you gotta do it either way. Keep a smile on your face and it'll be okay. So when life throws a jab, you gotta duck out of the way.
How you doing today, Evan?
I'm doing really good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. So getting right into your story, you grew up in Pennsylvania, but you actually weren't born in the country, right?
Correct. Yeah. I was actually born in Romania.
Yeah.
And I was adopted when I was about 6 months. I was born in 91. And my mom that adopted me was a psychologist in Pennsylvania, but we lived probably like 25 minutes outside of Philly.
Nice.
So that's PA. And the story is pretty crazy, man. I won't go into like too much crazy depth, but my mom, she was never married, you know, here in the States. And she was just kind of like this badass woman from Texas. And she just wanted a family her whole life. And, you know, during the time that I was adopted in Romania, there was a dictator. There was just a whole bunch of like political issues going on where they actually like put a ban on kids like leaving the country. So, yeah, there was just it was really bad, man. There was like kind of a some type of war going on during the 90s, early 90s. And so long story short, my mom was able, you know, obviously to adopt me, but I just think, you know, hearing parts of the story and just a lot of like, there was just a lot of stuff that, you know, was kind of happening behind the scenes, I think, just to get kids out of the country, because there were a lot of religious groups in the States that were trying to just bring as many kids from Romania in, and then they'd foster them out because it was just such a bad time in Romania.
Wow. So growing up around the house, what kind of music was being played that you feel like is your earliest memories of hearing music?
Man, when I was five, I started playing piano.
Mm-hmm.
And it was crazy. I like thinking about how this, you know, my influences and how that went, it's so spread out because I was classically trained when I was five, and then I started playing piano. And then by the time I got to third grade, which I'm a little blank on like what age that is. I don't know. I think it's like
probably like 8 or 9 or so.
Yeah, 8 or 9, right? So a couple of years later, after I started kind of learning about theory and classical music, I then picked up the violin. And these were all just like my own just like wishes. Like my mom never pushed anything on me. For some reason, I just gravitated towards wanting to play music. And kind of from that point on until I got to high school, I played violin for like 6 years, was in the orchestras in school, had private lessons, like was just, I'm so thankful for it now as a creator and a producer and a songwriter, because I just felt like all that theory that I was able to consume, and I'm not, you know, like a total nerd when it comes to, you know, chords and stuff like that, but just being able to, you know, work with artists and work with songwriters today and just, you know, be able to like try different keys. If we have to push something up a key, I know what chords fit in that opposed to the old one and different stuff like that. So I think as I kept growing up, baseball was a huge part of my life. So like by the time I was 10 and 11, I always tell people like music was always kind of in my back pocket in that way, where by the time I was 11, like the kids I grew up with, I played second base. Another guy was a pitcher. Another one was a catcher. And another guy was an outfielder, and we all were the same age. So there was like a lot of hype by the time we got to high school of like, wow, this is like, you know, we're kind of, there's a lot of expectations. And so I will say, you know, by that time as well, like I just remember early memories of there used to be a station called B101, and it was like this soft rock type station. So I just feel like, kind of to answer your question, by the time I got to high school, I would always listen to this station in the car with my mom, which was like Luther Vandross to like, you know, Sheryl Crow. And like, it was such a mixed bag on top of having this classical background. And then by the time I got to high school, like, I love guys like Gavin DeGraw, Maroon 5. You know, so, Songs with Jane had just come out kind of around then. And so I also was like a huge Michael Bublé fan, which was like, I felt like no one knew in high school. So just to answer your question, I feel like a lot of what makes me up today as a creator is all these different influences, you know, that I was kind of accustomed to. And, you know, the Yin Yang Twins had a huge phase through crucial years of my life, but, you know, and obviously, country music was a huge part as well. Coming from Philly, we had XTU, you know, 92.5. So, yeah, it was just kind of all over the place.
Now, in high school, were you mostly focused on baseball, or were you kind of starting bands with friends or jam sessions or anything like that?
So, what is crazy? It was definitely baseball. Like by the time I got to ninth grade, I played all 4 years of varsity. When I got to high school, it was, and I don't mean that in a douchebag way, but I felt like that was such a focus for me. And I really put in like so much work since I was 11, and like that was my life. But what was crazy was I didn't start singing until I was a sophomore in high school, because I didn't even know I could sing, you know, but I just felt like when I got to high school, I was like, dude, I don't want to play like classical songs anymore. This, like, I want to play the songs I hear on the radio. And so,
You just wanted to pick up girls. That's what happened.
Exactly, right? You got the I had like, you know, some baseball stuff happening and then all this stuff. And what was crazy was I remember I was literally at a party, and I don't know how I had the confidence or this or that, but I was at a party on the weekend with some of my best friends in high school, with guys and girls. And I remember the first song that I had ever sung, like in front of anyone else but my mom, was Chariot by Gavin DeGraw. And it was kind of like, I remember playing it at this party. And again, I don't know how I had the confidence to even sing in front of people or whatever. But from that point, you know, I got like an instant gratification when I started singing. You know, it's kind of one of those things of like, I just didn't know, you know, like if I was good or not. It just felt good to get that attention. So by the time I was a sophomore, I started learning more songs, started getting more comfortable singing in front of people. I entered our talent show, which were like massive, dude. They were like football, and our talent shows in high school were like people would show out. And I remember I went and played Chariot and for this talent show. And I would just never forget, you know, how that looked. But I remember finishing and just getting like a massive standing ovation and like the loudest, you know, it was just like one of those crazy moments. And our music director, who is the head music director of our school, approached me after that and wanted to like recruit me to be part of the, it was called the Silvertones, which is like the, on some, like the vocal group. I forget, like kind of like Glee, where it's just all vocal stuff. And you know what, man, just with baseball and everything, it just wasn't the right fit, because I just felt like I was so focused with baseball, and I tried it for a semester, but I also just felt like I wasn't totally like being accepted into the group, because, you know, it's like a bunch of kids who have been a little more, you know, theater oriented. That, you know, I think they kind of looked at me like, who's this jock, like being able to come in here and stuff like that. But it was all great. And I think that's what really fueled me going through high school, because you know, through baseball, my career set me up for college and in high school, and we were able to achieve a lot of great things. And but it was probably by the time I graduated high school is the first time I got into recording.
So it sounds like that probably your senior year of high school, you probably weren't even thinking about trying to pursue music professionally then at that point. Were you just going to go to college outside of that then, or once you graduated?
Yeah, so I kind of had a crazy beginning and end, I guess, to my high school and college. But I didn't go to college right away because pretty much all my coaches by the time I was 15 with baseball had either played pro ball or done this or that. And so there was a lot of connections and always conversations where, you know, when I wasn't playing, I played all year round. Mm-hmm. So by the time I was in the summer, I was traveling all over the country, all over the East Coast, playing in high, you know, AAU ball, like all this stuff. So by the time I graduated, there was a guy where my coach, one of my coaches from high school introduced me to, his name was Goose. And Goose was based in Delaware. He, worked a lot with Major League Baseball player development. Mm-hmm. So he would bring in guys like, I don't know how much, you know about baseball or players, but like guys like Aroldis Chapman, Jose Abreu, Yoenis Cespedes, you remember him?
Yeah, dude.
So Goose like signed all these guys. It was pretty much where like he would put together teams every summer, and I was an 18-year-old playing for Goose all around the country and, you know, playing with these guys from the DR, you know, and then we'd have, you know, the national cross checker, the Orioles, come with us for a weekend to look at these guys. So it was kind of like an exclusive look for all the connections Goose had, mm-hmm. where like these high end scouts, you know, guys, the guy from the Orioles who came with us had signed JJ Hardy, Manny Machado, like, you know, it was just one of these kind of unique experiences, and also so random that it was in, you know, based in Delaware, that was so close to me at the time. So I didn't go to college right away. I played for Goose till I was about 22, so about 4 years. During that time, though, my mom was like, hey, you got to like get at least an associate's degree, you know, while you're playing, and just like just so you have something.
Yeah.
You know, and all that. So I ended up getting like a JUCO, you know, I went to a community college in between all that. And, but it was probably by the time I was 20, I was falling in love. There's this band called Boyce Avenue. Have you ever heard of them?
No, I haven't.
Okay. You've probably seen their covers. They are YouTube's biggest like cover band. Like they're three brothers who play acoustic top 40 kind of covers every week. They've done stuff with Fifth Harmony, B. Miller, you know, like all this great stuff, racked up billions and billions of views. Like they cleaned up.
Oh,
and so when I was 20, I bought Pro Tools because I think just from the confidence I got, you know, from high school of like, wow, I feel like I can sing a little bit. I know how to play these instruments, but I don't know how to record music. So I bought Pro Tools. I knew that was like the industry standard. Mm-hmm. And this was like 2011, 2010 at the time. And I reached out to Boyce Avenue's. I found out who their engineer was, like through an email that I found like in their credits. Like I was doing a deep dive.
Oh, yeah.
And long story short, I emailed him, total cold call, cold email. Hey, man, like I'm 20. I don't even know how to create a click track, but I love this band you work with. It's kind of like what I want to get into and starting out with recording. And if you ever had any tips or something, like would love that, man. He emailed me back 10 minutes later that night. And then from like literally the next 5 years, he would teach me how to use Pro Tools over email.
Wow.
It was crazy. So it was like, I felt like, you know, as a 20-year-old, I think there's a lot of people that have a lot of questions on like, hey, maybe I should do this, right? There's a lot of uncertainty. And I felt like at that time I was kind of getting both because I was fueling, I think, this lifelong passion I'd always had when it came to music now, but it felt brand new because now I'm getting into recording. I get to do things my way. I get to try different things, but I was also still playing baseball and still try to figure that out. And Yeah, by the time I was 22, I ended up telling my mom, I was just like, I played with Goose as much as I could. I was like, you know what? I had experienced some incredible things, but I was really getting into music and I was really wanting to like just get a proper degree because I still was like unsure of like, if anyone was even going to care about my music. And I ended up going to Penn State. And throughout those, I was just there for 2 years because I got the, junior college degree. And throughout those 2 years, man, I had, at that time been doing, a cover a week for 2 years where I'd pick, the top 10 song on the charts. I did Sangria. I did Love Me Like You Mean It by Kelsea that did well like early on. I did Charlie Puth stuff, Shawn Mendes, kind of whatever was hot. And throughout those years at Penn State, my those covers started getting on Sirius XM. And they were just starting to get picked up. And I never had like this massive YouTube channel. And I was doing everything, man. I was like literally picking the song, playing the acoustics, singing the vocal. By Friday, my fiance and that who is my fiance now would film it for me, and then I do all the video edits, upload it by Sunday. That was constant for me, like for 2.5 years straight, and that really fueled me by the time I graduated college to like really pursue music and original songwriting.
Man, so what is that like, just doing covers and then having them go to Sirius? I mean, no label, no distribution, like that's just unheard of.
Dude, it was the craziest thing because there was a lot of unknowns where the amount of text messages and videos and pictures I got of people just sending me like, yo, dude, this is running. I had 10,000 Hours by Dan and Shay. That was in constant rotation on I think the two channels were there was a covers channel and then there was the Coffee House. I think were the two kind of ones. And then I'd done a Maroon 5, which is a crazy small circle moment. Because of like I told you, Sunday Morning was like the second song I ever learned and sang in front of people. And so it was their song Cold.
Oh yeah, you're so cold.
So I just had like a few of those in rotation. And what was crazy was by the time I graduated, because everyone would ask me, like, shouldn't you be getting paid? Like all this stuff. And I was like, no, dude, like this isn't my song. This is a cover. Like all that. What I didn't realize is the lovely people at Sound Exchange, where they collect pretty much all satellite radio royalties. So it was kind of a blessing in disguise because by the time I graduated college, I had like, crazy loans, all this stuff. And Sound Exchange called me and were like, hey, we have like 2.5 years of royalties for you. And, it was absolutely like not life-changing money, but for a 23-year-old, it felt like $1 million. And that also kind of gave me the fuel to kind of I was like, man, I got my degree. Like, I just felt so much confidence from one, like, this getting picked up. And I think the original YouTube video, to kind of answer your question, I think it got like 250K on YouTube. But that like if YouTube numbers, like that's really not that much, I feel like, there are plenty of creators that, have incredible careers and lives, who sit in the 1 to 5, 10, 20 million, kind of stream thing. So, I actually had a couple friends in the industry and I asked around and, I think it was through, I think the program director at Sirius had discovered other people sharing it on TikTok, not TikTok, on Twitter, which is crazy. And I think it was really, even though I didn't have the numbers, I think they just heard the quality of it and just started playing it like completely out of the divine. Like, and so I was like, incredibly grateful for that.
Now, what's the story behind making the decision to move to Nashville, and kind of what are your first months like there, kind of networking, getting your name out there?
Absolutely. So I had a crazy entrance. I knew one guy who was here. His name's Mark Frigo. I will always give him love because he was so instrumental in my entrance. He was, man, it was like 6 degrees of separation. He was like a friend of a friend of a friend's brother-in-law, you know, that from Pennsylvania, because Mark used to live here. And someone told me years before I moved here or even took a trip down here, they were like, hey, if you're ever in Nashville, you should hit up Mark. So by the time I graduated, I grew up in Pennsylvania, right, close to Philadelphia. I'd been to New York. I'd never been, let alone Los Angeles, I'd never been to California my whole life. So for me, Nashville was really appealing. One, because I had, you know, a potential contact down there, but also like it just felt right, you know, to try, if I'm going to try a new city, and it's obviously Music City. And so that summer I graduated college, I wrote 22 to 25 original songs. And I just felt like by this point, I'd been making music for 5 years, right? I had been subconsciously knowing how I want productions to sound at that time, the structure of you know, songs, melody, but I hadn't really gotten into original writing.
Yeah.
And so I kind of wrote, 22, 23, 100 percenters, came down here with Mark, got connected with him. And I took that sound exchange money and I worked out of a studio called the Brown Owl.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of it?
I feel like I've heard the name. I haven't been there though.
Okay. So it was the old location where I did everything was right around the corner from Blackbird.
Okay. Gotcha.
Where East Iris is off there. Mm-hmm. And me and Mark, this was 2017 fall. Me and Mark locked in for a week. Recorded every single song. And I remember the studio owner was a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the only thing I don't play are live drums. But I like played all the guitars, sang everything in, played this. So long story short, I got to the point where, wow, I was really loving Nashville. I was like loving driving around here, like learning it all on my own. I had no one really telling me like, hey, go here, go here. I was just totally in my world of like, pursuing my artist, you know, project. And I ended up asking that studio owner, you know, one, I was like, man, I just want to meet at least two people in Nashville. He's been incredible throughout this whole process. And three, you know, or two, would you want to play some drums? You know, would you want to just hear this? If you hate it, totally understand. But if you like it, you know, would you be open to maybe playing some drums? And he initially, you know, ended up loving it and became completely immersed in the project.
Yeah.
And he was like, look, I'm going to be in town, you know, starting in 2018 at the top of the year at that point. He was like, I'm going to be in town. He ended up, he's going to be in town working on a record. His name is Chris Kimmerer, who is incredible. And he has been and is still Thomas Rhett's drummer and band leader.
Okay, cool.
So like at that time, they were doing Life Changes,
mm-hmm.
that record. And for me, you know, coming from pop music, like I was taking trips then. I would write five more songs in Philly, come back, you know, once a month with Chris, sit in the studio, meet, he'd introduce me to more writers. And at that time too, while Life Changes was being made, I was like, wow, this is like progressively pop.
Right.
Country album. And so for me, it was like Nashville just felt perfect in so many ways. Obviously, as you know, one, because of the people and the community here, but I just felt sonically, it just felt right for everything I was pursuing for my artist project, but let alone just like as a creator, this feels right. This feels like a town where I can work in country. I appreciate an incredible lyric, but I also feel like I can bring, you know, some pop elements kind of into, you know, some artists' careers that, you know, might help elevate them or just create something different, you know, kind of like so many great artists like Sam Hunt, like Morgan's doing, you know, all these artists that you can kind of look of that kind of created that crazy moment where at first maybe people didn't love it, but then it ended up becoming, you know, a 5-year sonic sound. For the genre. And so after about long, you know, 6 months of taking trips down here in 2018, I was just like, man, I just had so much confidence. I was around, you know, a lot of people who were making number one records, and I was just soaking like all that information in. I was just like a fly on the wall, man. And I was just so honored and grateful that people respected my music and believed in me, you know, kind of in those circles. And so after 6 months, I just took the leap. I was like, man, I told my fiance, I was like, I think we need to be here. We ended up making the move in 2018. And yeah, that's how I kind of ended up here.
Hell yeah. Now, I want to do a little deep dive into some of your songs that you put out. One of my favorites, this is the whole reason I even hit you up originally. I mean, I looked at the credits of the song right after I heard it, is a Tennessee Love Song with Anella Harem. Yes. Kind of tell me the process of bringing that song to life. I mean, this is so catchy. I love that song, man. So what was the process of bringing it to life?
Dude, thank you so much. That was one of the craziest kind of moments and ideas. Like, I had never worked with an artist from Def Jam. Like, mm-hmm. Anella's on Def Jam Records. And I remember, you know, I was really deep in the last couple years of, you know, working with a lot of pop artists, but a lot of country artists like Georgia Webster, you know, Shaylin, you know, all these different people who kind of blended pop and country. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my initial thought when Anella was coming in was like, man, you know, like I'm just so curious on what this is going to sound like. It was so unknown to me. So Anella shows up and there's like seven guys with him. And I'm like, you know, all right, what's going on here? And
classic pop, right?
Yeah, dude. But none of them are writers. It was his entire team. It was his manager. It was his engineer, his like videographer, and then his A&R at the time, who isn't there anymore, but she came by. And they are all incredible people. And I think it just speaks to Anella and who he is and why so many fans love him once you get to meet him and talk to him. And so we kind of started, as my process goes for everything, I love just like, if I prepare tracks, I'll try to do that. But sometimes I'll just, you know, find loops or just kind of start with something on the guitar or piano. And I remember we had kind of stumbled on this guitar kind of like lick kind of thing, which started the whole process. And I just kept like, I was like, Anella, do you dig this? Like, is this cool? Is this too country or this or that or whatever? And I started to like realize, I don't know if you would say if like Anella is country, but I think he's like the exact opposite of what you would assume. Every time one, like if you just see him and you just hear his voice, you're like, whoa, I did not expect that. Mm-hmm. And I started building the track. Anella was sitting, you know, like standing right here looking at me as I'm, you know, kind of building everything. And him and I just started writing that first verse, Nicotine, Daydream, you know, all this stuff. And then we wrote the chorus, Get the Feeling Gone, Double Shot of Some Sweet of Some Strong. Mm-hmm. And we kind of got to that point. And I remember I was like, okay, I had him cut it in real quick because I'm such a process, a believer of like, I know everybody does the voice memo, you know, run it while we're thinking of melodies and stuff. But I love, if we all love something, just get on it right away. Let's get it in. So nobody has to go through their phone. We can re-sing it if it's not perfect, but we have the idea. So we did that. And then I started building the track a little more. And I remember Anella went out on the porch here. There's like a side porch over here. And he took like 5 minutes, you know, there's like so many people in the room where I was just like trying to, you know, we were having a, like just an incredible day. And then Anella comes back and is like, yo, I think I got the second verse. And that's the, you know, cheap beers, listening to Springsteen on some 15s, you know, all that mm-hmm. stuff. And I was like, dude, that's dope. That's it. Song's done. And we ended up cutting it in. And then Anella kind of hopped up because Anella does a lot of, you know, he has a lot of experience in production. And I had kind of like laid out the whole groundwork of it. And, you know, I left leaving that session being like, I remember sending that song at the time to my publisher and then just to a couple close people that I respected their opinions. And We wrote that in April last year. And man, Justin, it was like, there was something about that song that stuck with me where like, not only I would listen to it, you know, the next couple of days following that session, but then I'd listen to it a month later and be like, damn, this shit still hits.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is like, I got a call from Anella's manager by September, I think. And he was like, hey man, we're putting this out. His A&R had called me and was like, dude, this, we're going through his catalog. Like, this is the best song I think he's ever done. We want to get this out. What does that look like? So we got that all together. We got it mixed. We got it mastered. And what was crazy was I remember when I got that call, Anella had 1,000 followers on TikTok.
No way.
He had like 3 videos up, dude. And I remember I was like, all right, you know, like obviously any major label cut is great, right? Because you hope the, you know, there's resources put behind the song and whatever. But I was like, man, I was so curious on how this was happening. And so we're about a month out from release. Anella starts, you know, going crazy with content. And then 2 weeks before the release, Anella has a trending sound on TikTok with just him on an acoustic singing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, man, that song has been such an incredible journey. I give Anella so much credit because I think we're in a world where artists move on so quickly from songs. And we have done 4 versions of that song. We did a piano. We did an acoustic version. We got Chase Matthews on it.
Yeah, I just saw that. That's sick.
We did 4 versions, and I give Anella so much props for pushing that song for months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is so old school, man. And yeah, the songs just, I think, put Anella on the map. And I will tell you this. I don't know if it's announced yet, but we have a song, a single coming out with Anella and David J.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. That's going to sound sick.
It's sick. We just got it done. David J and I have been working really closely lately. And we got to the point where it was me, Autumn Bicey, David, and Rufio Hooks,
mm-hmm.
Who wrote it. And just got to the point where David J was like just loving it. And you know, David is taking Anella out on tour in April.
Heck yeah.
For David's first headline tour. So I was like, well, man, with my connection with Anella already, I was like, this sounds like a perfect fit, not only because of the song, but just like, I think just because of the resources and the connections. And then Anella jumped on it, wrote his verse, sung his chorus. I am so pumped for this song. And like I said, I believe it's coming out in April. I know it is, but yeah, I just don't know the date yet. But, yeah,
he only believes it, guys. It's not official yet.
Yeah.
So another artist you've been working with is Will Cullen. I mean, if you have a TikTok, you've definitely seen Will all over it. You guys did Promise I'm Trying together. What was the process of working with Will on that one?
Yeah, I, man, he had come in. I know he had been, I guess had been, we kind of talked briefly a couple times about working together. And, I know Autumn Bicey, you know, I think was kind of the spear in that, kind of connecting that session together, because I think she was all over that album. And it was crazy because I had definitely seen Will on TikTok a bunch. And when we got together, he really wanted like a crazy ballad. You know, he really wanted lyrically and I think sonically something that just felt real. And he kind of had this title. He brought it in. It's called Promise I'm Trying. And as we started kind of working through it, I just remember like we were starting to write verses, write ideas down. I think we started with the chorus. You know, I was kind of running some melodies for him as like ideas and figuring out chords in the piano. We knew we wanted it to be piano focused over guitar. And, you know, I just think as the verses started coming out, I remember we had something and I just kind of looked at Autumn and Will and was like, you know, if we're really going to go here, like, Will, we need to talk about like, you know, what you're really feeling. Like, let's not fluff this up and just like you need to go there. And one of my favorite lines in that song is, you know, you might see me singing on sidewalks and look like I'm happy, or I can't remember the exact lyric at this point, but it was like, that was real, because that's like, how a lot of the world knows him. Sorry, our dogs are like barking like crazy. I don't know if you
All
can hear
good.
That.
No, I can't hear them on my end, so you're good.
Okay. But yeah, I just like, I felt like getting those lines in and really how Will was feeling. It's like, I think a lot of the world looks at him and it's like, he's got millions of followers on Instagram, you know, on TikTok, and gets millions and millions of views over the last couple of years. And he's like, my life isn't like, you know, all that great. Like, I think he struggles a lot with the expectations and just the grind of it. So I was really happy with the way that came together, and it ended up becoming the title track to his EP. And I think as a, you know, songwriter, that's, you know, that's all you can hope for.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned working with Shay Lynn. You worked on her track Cowboys Never Cry, which you co-produced with Ilya Toshinsky. And so he actually worked on my last project that I did. I mean, just a master musician. I mean, whole nother level. What was it like co-producing a track with him?
Man, it was crazy. I remember I wrote that song with Shay Lynn and Seth Ennis. Mm-hmm. And I remember the day of, sorry, I'm just telling it for the dogs. Hang on. Okay. I remember the day of, it started on piano. I initially had this melody that was going to be, it was this idea. I forget what the title was, but it was like, 1, 2, 3, yeah, bar, keep it running, till it bone and don't keep it coming. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it was a totally different vibe, but I think the title, I'm forgetting what the title was. I don't know what it was, but long story short, Seth and Shaylin, Shay was like, I don't know if I like vibe with that hook, but both of them were like, we love that melody though for the chorus. So then I think Seth started playing guitar on here, long story short. And then we kept the chorus melody, but stumbled across this hook, Cowboys Never Cry. And I remember we cut that day of, and as typical as me and Shaylin's process kind of has been, we sat with it. We all felt it was special immediately. We were like, this is crazy. Her voice is crazy on it. And I kind of texted Shay and I was like, hey, I think you should come back in. I think we need to bump this up like a half step key-wise. Yeah. So she came in. I was like, let's just try it, because it's already a massively high chorus, right? Let's just see if you can do it. I'm a big proponent as a producer trying to get as things as high as we can without killing the artist. But like, you know, I just think there's something to that psychologically with, you know, higher frequencies and stuff like that. Long story short, we ended up getting to her team. Her team freaked out. We then had a moment. I think the first video she posted on TikTok got over like 500,000 views. And then Ilya is, I think, kind of a partner or within her management company, mm-hmm. you know? And so what a resource for her. Ilya's been a part of, you know, everything she's done since day one. And we ended up taking it. And I, you know, really got close with Ilya during that time, because I had heard about him for years. You know, I had heard how incredible he was, not only as a musician, but, you know, especially in recent years, he'd been really getting into production. Mm-hmm. And it was flawless. I mean, we kept a lot of what I had in that. I think we kept damn near everything. We kept the vocal. Shaylin never recut. But Ilya is so great. I mean, he knows all the session players, the studios, and he pretty much rounded up the crew. And he was just so like incredibly kind to me, especially because I felt like he didn't, you know who I was. But as we just got to know each other more and I started sending him more songs, I think he started to really respect, you know, what I do as a creative. And he was just so kind of like always wanting my opinion, you know. He didn't just kind of take the reins and be like, all right, dude, I got this. It was such a collaborative effort. And I was just like, the first time we kind of went back and forth on notes, and then Jim Cooley mixed it. Mm-hmm. Man, the first time I heard that song mixed and done, like, I was blown away of just like, wow, this is like kind of how I felt. I feel like the machine works in country music, where, you know, you get all the great session players, you get the Jim Cooleys, Jeff Bronze, you know, the big mix engineers that do every number one record, every big late, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, wow, this is what it sounds and feels like when you kind of go all the way and get all the fruits of this town. And also deliver, you know, have a great song to begin with, kind of come together. It was incredible.
Now, aside from all the projects you've worked on for other artists, you still continue to put out music of your own over the past couple of years. How important has that been for you to like kind of balance that out and still have a creative outlet for yourself to still continue to put out music?
Thank you for asking that, Justin. It's man, it's been a crazy ride because when I first got here, I started releasing a bunch. I did a distribution deal with Tone Tree. Mm-hmm. Music in Town, and we did two EPs together, and my one song I think still is on Today at Apple, which is pretty much every single Apple store in the country. I still get texts today of like, hey, I'm in the Apple store, your song's playing, and stuff like that. And we had a great little run, but what kind of happened was like, man, I remember before I had done anything, even met a good amount of people, I sat with an A&R at Atlantic Records at the time that was here. And she was like, she asked me the same thing. She said, Evan, you know, you have this great artist project, but you also write and produce for others. Like, which lane do you want to do? And I remember sitting there and telling her like, man, I want to do it all. I want to do what Ryan Tedder's doing in LA. You know, do I see myself having as big of an artist project as One Republic? Probably not. But I do think vocally, you know, that has helped me, you know, present songs that have gotten cut, you know, on in kind of my process of, I need that outlet to write for myself because I have so much output meeting the expectations of other artists and, you know, trying to make sure labels are happy, A&R's management, you know how it goes, all the kind of people that are involved. And for me, when I get to write on my own, the only expectations I have to meet are my own. And so I just feel like there have been a number of songs that I've started for myself, not in a really a hope of like wanting to release it, but just for my own energy and like creative flow. And then I've pitched them in the room to artists. I've done that with Shay on another song, an idea that it was actually our first session. And it was this idea that we ended up writing, called Good Whiskey. It was me, Shay, and Matt. God, is it Matt McCormick or Matt? Hold up. You're McCormick.
Yeah, there's another McCormick. I know Jim McCormick's a songwriter. I don't know if I know Matt.
Matt McKinney.
Okay, gotcha.
No, over at Sony. And so, yeah, man, I am not currently releasing music. I also felt like it's been a crazy season the last couple of years with the production and writing. And I'm so grateful for that. But I am trying to get back, as I've kind of had recently, of the times that I've been able to create on my own. I've created, you know, some really great pitch records where, you know, we've gotten some bites. There's a song currently that, you know, has been sent over to some people in LA for, I think, like, you know, a couple artists like Jason Derulo and Flo Rida. It's kind of in that world of, there's been conversations for that. So I just feel like, I need to do that continuously, whether I ever release music as an artist. I just think it is my one kind of superpower in that way of being able to, you know, present great songs to the artists I get to work with and be in the room with, and also songs that I just get to make for myself that nobody ever gets to hear.
Sure. Just, I like to close my interviews by asking, what's a piece of advice that you would give to all the aspiring songwriters, artists, producers out there that you've learned along your journey?
Man. I haven't experienced it at the level, you know, that, one I want, but, I think, you know, hearing it back from so many people who have had massive hit records, and I was kind of reminded of it yesterday. The piece of advice I would give is when it comes to hit songs, it really comes down to the right song at the right time for the right artist and when the world needed to hear it.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the quality of the song. And I think that would be the advice, because I've gone through it. I feel like we're so close to these songs as creatives and writers. And I think, you know, there's no reason for you to justify you're not, you know, a hit writer until the industry tells you you are. I think you need to know, you know, you have to believe in yourself, you know, in so many ways and almost delusionally in a way, but you got to know you got hits in you, man. And if you just believe that and just keep showing up every day, I feel like it's just what everybody says. And like I said, I haven't even experienced it yet, but I do feel prepared when that moment happens where, you know, it's really not up to you, man. There's so many things out of your control when it comes to, you know, hit songs and trying to or at least achieve the success you've set up for yourself.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening in this week. And thank you again, Evan, for taking the time to come on the show. I had a great time talking with you, man. Everyone go follow him on Instagram at @EvanKlein_ and keep up to date with everything he's working on. And also follow Starting Small Music on Instagram @StartingSmallMusic and let us know who you'd like to hear on the podcast next.